Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 4th of July, Independence Day, Anno Domini 2000, and let's say 20.
Let's get rid of 20. Make it go away, please.
I give it 1 star. Don't recommend.
Do not recommend.
Do not replay.
Would not buy again. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Before we get started, indeed, happy Independence Day. Let us celebrate America.
And happy Canada Day to our friends to the north.
To the north. Before we get too far, we do have a new text number. Those of you who like to text us questions or comments, you'll find that we have a new text number. You can see it at our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. It's 585-205-8887. 585-205-8887. The number in Bayonne, 585-205-8887. And before we get to the phones, I'm going to read today's news.
Ta-da.
A team of academics has described this week a method that can help identify when Facebook app developers surreptitiously share user data with third parties. Named Canary Trap, the technique was detailed by academics from the University of Iowa in a white paper published on Monday. At its heart, Canary Trap revolves around the concept of a honey token. In the broad sense of the term, honey tokens represent fake data, tokens, or files that IT experts plant across their network. When the data are accessed or used, administrators can detect malicious activity in the content because nobody would normally look at those files, right? They
hopefully
would not be used. In the context of the Canary Trap white paper, honey tokens were unique email addresses that academics used to register Facebook accounts. For the Canary Trap research, after registering an account, researchers installed a Facebook app, used it for 15 minutes, and then uninstalled the app from the account. Researchers then monitored the honey token email inbox for new traffic. If the inbox received new emails, it was then clear that the app shared the user's data with a third party. Furthermore, the research team also said it used Facebook's ad transparency tool, Why Am I Seeing This?, to monitor and if an advertiser used any honey token email to target users with Facebook ads. The academic team said they tested 1,024 Facebook apps using their Canary Token technique and identified 16 apps that shared email addresses with third parties and resulted in users receiving emails from unknown senders. Researchers said they only found 16 apps, but this was because they only used a small sample of 1,024 apps. If more apps had been tested, are to be tested, researchers expect to find more apps sharing user data with third parties. A Facebook spokesrobot said that the company was still analyzing the Canary Trap paper. However, Facebook is well aware of its rogue app developer problem and in recent years has pretended to take, it says, taken steps to cull bad apples from its developer base. For the past year, Facebook has sued several developers and has modified its terms of service and developer policies to grant itself more power enforcing strict user data controls. The latest change in Facebook's fight against abuses by app developers took place on Wednesday, when Facebook announced its most recent suite of updates to its platform terms and developer policies set to enter into effect on August 31st, 2020. The company said the new terms limit the information developers can share with third parties without receiving explicit consent from users and also ensures developers clearly understand that they have a responsibility to safeguard user data if they tap into Facebook's platform and user base to build their own business. Theoretically, these new changes address the loopholes reported by the Canary Trap team. We'll see what kind of teeth those terms have because that's what really tells you whether or not it works. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, again, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Facebook apps caught secretly sharing data? Your choices are, of course they are. Really? Huh. I'll dump them immediately. I don't care. Face what now? And other. So far, we've got 25 votes. Of course they are as well in the lead, lagging far behind is face what now, followed by all the rest. And of course, if you said other, please leave a comment on the on our site. If you go to soundbites.org, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. Click on that. It'll take you to the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item under poll discussions is for July 20, Facebook apps caught secretly sharing data. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
There have been a lot of stories recently about apps that have gotten caught unintentionally sharing data because
accidentally
because they're using a Facebook API.
Yeah.
So why is everyone surprised that Facebook shares your data?
We've only been saying that since the day it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they got caught again, and Mark will probably apologize and say they'll do better.
Yeah.
To not get caught.
And don't hold your breath.
Yeah.
Remember, Mark Zuckerberg is the man who famously said privacy is dead. He doesn't believe in privacy. He doesn't accept that people have the right to privacy, and yet everybody's surprised when Facebook shares your data.
Well, when people go online and fill out those stupid quizzes and everything else, and you know, they literally self-destruct themselves in the fact that they go out there and post anything and everything.
Right.
And the dichotomy of going onto Facebook and posting something in public.
Right.
And then expecting something else they post to be private.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like, here's the biggest stupidity. When somebody will sit there and post that somebody passed away.
Yeah.
And they're going to be at a funeral or they're going away on vacation. Why don't you just put a big sign on your house? I'm not here. Come and rob me.
Take what you want.
Yeah, because I'm not home. I pasted it on Facebook. I'm going to be out of town for a couple of weeks.
That's exactly right.
Then they're horrified. Oh, I got broken into.
Right.
Really?
Or they take all those quizzes, which gives away all of their private information.
Yes.
And then they're surprised when they get broken, when somebody steals their...
Yeah.
So it's a lot. It's a lot to handle.
On the internet. It's called the World Wide Web, folks. Right. And there are people in other countries that don't give a darn about your privacy.
Right.
They just want to steal your information and your money, and they don't care. They'll go to bed and sleep very fine, thank you.
And richer.
And they're not going to get prosecuted.
Right. Because
how are they going to do that overseas?
Right.
Yeah, not happening.
If there's no extradition, if there's no agreements between the two countries.
Especially you go to, Africa or any of the South American countries. Or
any of the old SSR, the USSR.
Yeah.
Socialist republics, all of those.
I just read half an article this morning about a Nigerian spammer who was caught and extradited to the U.S. And,
nice.
Well, because he kept posting on Instagram his fancy cars and his fancy jewelry and his fancy everything else he gets from all the spams.
People really are idiots.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phone. Our first caller is Kathy from Ontario, New York. What's up, Kathy?
Hi, guys. I've got a question for Steve. Sometime this week, my iPad calendar wiped every single entry and it changed its format. The phone still lists the days vertically. I can't get a vertical view on my iPad.
Auto rotate.
Yeah, some of it is the rotation. You may see different displays depending on how the iPad is rotated. And at the top of the calendar app is four tabs to let you see your vertical day or your horizontal week and then month and year.
I have no vertical day option. I have day, week, month, year. That's it.
Yeah, in day mode, I'm seeing everything vertically. What?
In day mode, what I'm seeing is vertical day with the individual hours.
Right.
Like I used to use at work. The phone doesn't show that.
Because the phone has a smaller screen.
Well, yeah, but why did it wipe all my data?
It shouldn't have. What account are you syncing your calendar data with?
My iCloud account.
All right, go into your iCloud settings and make sure it's turned on. Sometimes it may have gotten turned off. You may have there wasn't that big a change in the calendar. I know there was an OS update that came out. I think last week it was.
I'm up to date on both the phone and the iPad match. I'm looking for iCloud settings. And where should I be finding that?
In the settings app under iCloud.
In the settings app under iCloud.
And you want to make sure your calendar's turned on. If you happen to also be using Google Calendar Events or Yahoo Calendar Events, that would be under Passwords and Accounts.
Nope, I try to keep it simple.
If you somehow signed into a different Apple ID, that would show you different information.
Only have one. iCloud calendar is not turned on.
So it's not showing you those events.
Now it is. Going back to calendar.
It may take a few moments for those events to start downloading. And the events were still showing on your phone, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because there's this catch-22 about if you delete an event here, does it sync empty?
Right.
Or was that an accident and it not sync empty?
Right.
So we've seen sometimes where things go a little crazy and it syncs the empty calendar instead of the full calendar.
But you're seeing them now?
No. Nothing.
In the calendar app, you have to turn on the calendars you want to see. So on the different calendars on each calendar account, you can check them on or off to see different events on different calendars. Tapping the calendars button in the bottom center of the app will let you see what your calendar accounts are.
Ah, the calendar account default was set to Gmail, and I don't use Gmail's calendar. I just set it to home for iCloud.
So you were using Gmail's calendar without realizing it.
Right. And so since you have nothing on it, it was running correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It was running correctly. It wasn't the way you wanted it to.
Right.
It was running the way you pointed it to.
Yeah.
The way it pointed itself to.
Yeah, we always joke.
But you should see them again now, Kathy. You should at least start to see them soon.
So you want to go on your phone and make sure you have the same calendar accounts loaded and the same calendars loaded.
Okay, I'll check that one.
Okie doke.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Sure.
Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah, we've joked that computers are really good at doing what you tell them to, not what you want them to.
Right. And as we continue to see this, as more and more things go to the cloud and as you get more and more stuff that interacts, it gets more and more complex.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to know where you really are as opposed to where you think you are.
Right. And if you set up a Google email address, you also get Google Calendar and Google Contacts and all the other Google services.
Right.
And your device generally tries to be helpful and turn them all on for you when you add your email address.
Right.
So you may not realize. And then one of the other confusions that happens is if you don't have an internet calendar account turned on, it will use calendar accounts only on your device, and then they never sync anywhere.
Right.
So you have to find that the section where you tell it what your default calendar is, and you want that to be on the syncing service of your choice so it syncs with your other devices.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I was tooling around on my iPad a week or two ago, and I think I synced something, and I probably did something wrong. At any rate, what has happened is on my iMac the other night, I was looking for photos, and it's no longer there. And so for some reason, I got ready to delete something, and I put it into the trash can. And when I opened up the trash can, here are all of my photos that were in photos on now in the trash can with some weird kind of thing that says size, but then the kind is AAE sidecar, whatever that is. So I went to my iCloud account, and Photos is there now with every photo I ever had in iCloud, but the app itself is completely gone off my computer, and all of these images are now sitting in my trash can.
I would try doing a search for the Photos app. You may have accidentally dropped it into another folder. Since Photos is part of the OS, the only way to get it back is to reinstall the OS. But you should be able to do that over top of your current OS without too much trouble. And I'm looking up the AAE sidecar format. It might be something that's done with the editing options. It's an XML file that contains all your edits and adjustments, yeah. So whenever you edit a file, it keeps track of all those edits so that you can always go back to the original file by undoing the edits.
It's odd that
it's in the trash, though.
Yeah, the good news is everything is up in iCloud, so I don't seem to have lost anything over the years, but it's just the fact that the Photos app itself is just no longer on my computer that I can see anyway, and then all these other images are just sitting here in trash. Now, what I can do is pull one out of trash and put it on the desktop and open it up, and all of my photos suddenly open up on the desktop.
It sounds like several things happened that you may have somehow photos exported from the library or the edit files exported themselves. You normally aren't supposed to see the edit files. You may want to run the disk first aid in the utilities. Disk utility, there might be something going wrong with the directory on the computer that keeps track of where your files are.
All right.
Because it shouldn't do that automatically, and I'm trying to think of a way it would do that manually, too. So I'd be a little afraid something is going wrong with your hard drive.
Well, at least I'm backing up after you scolded me a couple of years. So I got backups of everything now.
If everything is in the cloud, also you get the Photos app reinstalled, and then you can resync to the cloud to bring them all back down.
How old is your machine, Larry?
This is a 2012.
Oh, yeah.
It won't even take Catalina.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still working and doing what I needed to do, but I think it stopped at version...
it's probably 10.13, because I have maybe 10, because I have a 2012, and I've got 10.14 on mine.
Yeah, but as Steve said, it's very possible that at least the hard drive is it's no longer as healthy as it once was.
Oh, I'm sure of that. it's version 10.13.6.
Yeah, hi Sierra, 10.13. And now we've got 10.16 coming, so everyone's going to get a little bit farther behind this fall.
Yep.
Okay. My cheapness won't let me get another one, at least for right now. But
yes,
I suppose,
as long as it's working.
Point.
But, if something starts to die, the disk first aid is a good first step to see if there's something wrong on the disk. And then we see people will replace the hard drive. Typically, on the older models like that, you replace the spinning drive with a solid-state drive, so you get faster in addition.
You know, a smaller drive.
That, I just plan to get another machine so I could get the very latest OS and everything. That would be the way I would eventually go.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. And then just I have one other little weird question. I opened Gmail on my iPhone the other day, and everything is suddenly crammed to the left. You can't see what it is, anything. It's just everything just went to the left of the screen in one little line.
Sounds like a rendering problem.
It is a rendering problem. I've seen it before. When did this happen, and is it still doing it?
It's still doing it. I'm actually using my iPhone to talk to you right now, so I can't really look at it.
Right.
I don't think I can. But it started about a week ago. not quite a week ago. And I just got up one morning, turned my phone on as I usually do, checked my Gmail because I was getting in the car, and all of a sudden everything was on the left side of the screen in one little line.
I
love it when you guys are silent.
You can change the... Interesting.
I would quit the app and relaunch it to see if that makes it re-render.
The Gmail app?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I got two things to do then. Okay.
I'm seeing a lot of things about how to align text in a message, but not everything gets pushed over to the left. So it is a rendering problem of some sort. Maybe the Gmail app will get updated to fix it. Maybe they released an update that had problems.
That's not an impossibility, of course.
Okay. I know there's a setting. I don't use the Gmail app that often, but there was a setting about relaxed text or readable text versus
comfortable readable.
Condensed. So depending, you want more text on the screen. Or you want bigger text to be easier to read.
Right. Or the first couple lines of the message.
Yeah. Well, if I could even get into it, as I said, right now I have one little line right down the left of the screen, and that's it. And the rest of the screen is a nice, clear whatever.
Yep. I might suggest rebooting the phone.
How do you do that?
Turn it off and turn it back on.
Turn it off and turn it back on again. Turn it off, wait a minute, and turn it back on again.
Oh, I knew that.
Yeah, not just put it to sleep, turn it all the way off, but the shutdown.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
Because there just might be a jumble somewhere in the system. One of the realities of our lives is that glitches happen, whether they're inherent in the RAM, or you zapped it with static, or sunspots, or whatever it might be. The reality is that every once in a while there's a glitch, and often you can fix that.
Mine happened just last week. I've got, my Pixel, and it was evidently happened Wednesday night because I never received a text that came in, and they wanted me to work on Friday. But it wasn't until Friday afternoon I went to go send a text, and it said, no network. And I go, what? I did a shutdown, like you said, waited a minute or two, started up. All of a sudden, all these messages come in, these texts come in, and everything else, and it's like, and I had no clue.
Yeah, glitches happen, and usually restarting the machine will, if it's a minor glitch, restarting the machine will fix that.
Okay, so I'm going to go to the disk utility, work that, and then I'm going to turn my phone off, wait a couple of minutes, and turn it on.
In disk utility, you want to use the first aid tab? Stay away from the erase tab.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Although there's like three warnings that you're erasing your drive, but we still have people that come in and say, I didn't know I was erasing my drive.
Because they didn't take the time to read it.
Right. People just hit
it. They get click happy, even on a phone.
Yep. All right. You good, Larry?
Okay. Thank you. I'm good. Thank you.
All right. Hope it all works. Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yep. Yeah, we're finding that, particularly as devices get older, but also with more sunspot activity or with thunderstorms or static electricity, particularly if you're in a room with a lot of air conditioning, you can build up static. Yeah. It's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of volts.
Petting your cat.
And that's funny, too, because right now we're at the bottom of the solar sunspot issues.
Right, right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Tom from Irondequoit, New York on the line. What's up, Tom?
Happy 4th, guys.
Happy 4th.
Just a quick question. I have Frontier ISP and I think that uses Yahoo as a mail server.
Yep.
I have occasions, quite a few occasions, I get, when I try to send an email to people who use Roadrunner, it comes back as undeliverable. All right? Some of the people who get, who have the Roadrunner, say they are experiencing this problem with other senders also. Is this a, and he claims it's a problem with Spectrum. Have you guys heard anything about this? Is there anything I can do at my end that would be causing this problem?
Well, if it was only you to some people on Roadrunner, I would say it's your problem. But if those people are having the same problem with multiple other senders, I have to say it's Roadrunner's problem.
And in that undeliverable message, it will tell you why it's undeliverable, and that would help diagnose where the problem is.
Oh, is that that mailer daemon?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Oh, it's. I mean, there's a lot of script in there, and
There would be an error number that would say why it's undeliverable.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to take a closer look at. I know it gives you the date. They said there's multiple times that they sent it, and it was still undeliverable. And then there's probably 50 lines of mostly script.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
But somewhere in there, it will give you an actual
a reason
text message that is the reason for the undeliverability. One thing you might do is look very closely at the email addresses and make sure they're correct.
Oh, yeah, they're correct.
Right, yeah. What we sometimes often see, is that
yeah.
right? What we frequently see is the Roadrunner domain, rr.com, gets added to the spam lists because somebody on Roadrunner, 100 million customers, whatever it is, somebody on Roadrunner is sending spam, so the entire Roadrunner domain gets put on a spam list, and so no one on Roadrunner can receive mail. And all the mail bounces is undeliverable because of a spam blacklist.
You mean the recipient would be putting that on us, have it on the spam list, or?
Could be either way.
Okay.
Somebody reported Roadrunner is sending spam, and so all Roadrunner mail gets bounced.
Okay. See, now some of the email they receive and some they don't.
Yeah. It could be any one of 100,000 things, but the thing you need to do is look through those emails and find the message that says why that was not deliverable.
And it would be a readable message for a somebody that's...
Somewhere in all that script will be actual human-readable text.
Usually near the top.
Near the top, okay. It'll give you a reason.
Yep.
All right.
It'll say something like error 123456-7 dash some reason.
Okay, and I could Google that error number? Or?
Yeah, generally speaking, you could, yes.
Okay, it gives you an error and a number.
And the message, yeah.
Oh, and the message. So they do expound on what the error number means.
Right.
It could be mailbox full.
Okay.
So that person's mailbox is too full and it can't receive any more messages.
Right.
All right, I appreciate your help.
Yep.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Stay safe.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, again...
It's usually the 500 series errors that are permanent.
Right.
I like the messages. It says your message can't be sent, but we're still trying. And then 4 days later, it comes back and said, I've given up, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. but yes, one of the issues that we've seen over and over and over again is that Frontier, Yahoo, and several others really don't do email incredibly well. So your best bet in general is to stick with an email system like Gmail, Apple Mail, Outlook, somebody who knows what they're doing.
And you don't have to have an Apple device to get an Apple email account.
Right.
Because they have Apple Music for Android, iTunes for Windows.
Right. You also don't have to have an Android device to get a Gmail account.
Yep.
So you can do whatever you want. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hi, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Yeah, this seems to be the day for people to be losing their files and things like that. And that includes me, apparently. I've got a Windows 10 machine, and I'm the administrator for it. I've got two other users who use it in the family. And last couple of days, I can see my files just fine. But they, when they logged on, they saw zero. All of their data files or their documents folders were completely empty. I looked at, tried to look at them myself. First, I just tried to double-click on the folders, and I got a message saying I don't have permission to look at them. In the past, I've always been able to, because I'm the administrator, to look at other users' files. But the message came up saying I don't have permission to see them. I did right-click on those folders, and it showed the amount of data in it, and that was zero. So has there been an update to Windows recently that might have done something like this?
Many, and for years.
Yeah, but there have been. There was an update recently that did, in fact, do pretty much exactly what you're describing. The files did not disappear. They were moved to a hidden partition.
And if you're lucky, they weren't deleted at the end of the update. Because the files right. are supposed to be moved back where they belong and then deleted from that temporary location.
So where do I look for these hidden folders?
We're looking at that up right now.
Glad.
Let's see. Microsoft actually has a support article about finding lost files after your upgrade.
Right. So...
Use search or restore from backup. Is there
those are your two choices? Your nice
suggestions.
Steve can
sign in as a different user,
right? So, as administrator, you may be able to find those files if they have not been erased.
Yeah.
And of course, this is why we tell people backup constantly.
Sure, and this is another reason to finally get away from Windows.
Yes, it is. Yes, it absolutely is. When their own backup erases your machine, when their own, rather, update erases your machine, it might be time to move.
I mean, at this point, Windows is the definition of malware.
I don't disagree. It's become an unreliable operating system at best. And that's entirely on Microsoft.
They keep trying to add new features to make it compelling for people to buy.
But there is none really to do. I mean, Google makes it so simple to back up all your stuff, all your files, all your photos, everything. So it doesn't matter what device you log into. If you have a Chromebook, a Mac, or whatever, you can log into a Google account and get at all that stuff, and it's up there.
I can't tell you the last time I saved anything important to my computer.
I don't.
So here's my question, though. You mentioned that there's a way to search for it. How do you search for these?
Within, say, your Google, you go to Google Docs.
Well, he's talking about his Windows machine.
Windows.
Yeah, the search tab at the top of a window.
And what do you put in for the search?
The file name of any file.
That you're missing.
Of any file. Now, suppose they were, quote, erased. Technically, when you erase a file on Windows, the data's still there. It's just that the search engine...
It just depends on whether something else got overwritten.
Right, until it gets
on
overwritten,
it.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. But I do have backups, but...
There was a couple utilities...
Norton used to have
if you do a Google search, I've forgotten it because I have it at home and I haven't used it in quite a long time.
Undelete or unerase.
Yeah, there's a number of utilities that will scan your hard drive, and I think even SpinWrite had something in there too that you could have it scan your hard drive and look for any erased files and restore them. So you might want to look for a utility like that that will scan your complete hard drive. It'll take quite a bit of time to find it because it's got to go through all of them. But it'll come up with a list of all the files. Now, they're going to have weird names in front.
Yeah, you'll lose the names and you'll lose the folder name they were in, but you may get the file back.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's which, so it's probably easier to restore from backup. Now, if you're lucky, you can go into the users folder and say the user that's missing their files is Chris. You may find a Chris.000, which is the old folder that still has the stuff in it.
Yep.
Does Microsoft, Pat, you say they have some kind of a notice about this where they're giving you at least some information about what might have happened?
No.
No.
They tell you what to do, which is log into a different account and see if they're there, or restore from backup.
Those are their two choices.
Yep.
And pray.
Yeah.
That's about it.
This is why we tell people backup, and it might be time to find an alternative to Windows.
I did a search for Windows Update lost files, and so I found the one from October 2019. I found the one from February 2020. And now I just found one from April 2020. That might be the one he got caught by.
That must be the one. Yeah, but there's really nothing.
That's why we tell folks to back up all the time.
That article's coming from an undelete company that will tell you
how to
undelete.
At least in three different places.
I'm kind of strained for time myself. I wonder if bringing this to a dealer, would that be a possible approach to this?
It's going to cost you.
And it would have to be someone that can do data recovery.
Yeah.
Yes. Most of the files are not that important, but there are a few that one of my users, my wife actually, had some very important files that we're trying to find.
Well, like we said, there are really only two choices. One is search.
Yeah. I mean, you could start the search tonight, and probably by tomorrow when you wake up, it'll have done the whole search.
Yeah, there are a number of undelete programs like Kickass Undelete, Recover, a couple of others, but really, generally speaking, it's backup.
Right.
Sorry.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, I found a big article from Ease US, who also sells recovery software. I think a lot of the recovery software. Well, the bad thing is you need to download it and install the software, which then could overwrite some of the files you're missing. Most of them have a trial mode where it will look for files, and then if you actually need to recover them, then you have to pay.
Right, and in terms of backup, maybe you want to post this if you don't mind. The Ask Nick article on backing up. AskNick.com/backup.php will give you for every major operating system, all five of them, a number of products that to do backup with, what they do, how they work. And for those of you who are looking for cloud backup specifically, I'd like to recommend pCloud, which I talk about at the very top of that page. There is a fair notice that the lifetime subscription takes you to my affiliate link, but the lifetime subscription is also 75% off this weekend. But I think it's still on. I shouldn't say that because it might not still be on it. But it was yesterday. It was 75% off. So,
and see, that's the whole problem. Like with Tom, there, it takes a catastrophe.
Yep.
Something important that will now trigger you to do what we've been saying to do for a long time.
Yeah, and I backed up.
It takes your wife losing something important.
I backed up some of the files.
And that
doesn't really help much, does it?
That's when you get in the biggest trouble, too.
That's exactly right.
Because then it's now your fault because you didn't back up her files.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Patrick from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Patrick. What's up?
Well, this might be the iPad day.
Uh-oh.
I borrowed an iPad so I could test out Zoom on the iPad. And a couple things are different than when I use it on my desktop, which I am fortunate to be one of the Windows 10 users that doesn't really have problems so far. But anyway, when I click on the chat, if I do that on the desktop, a window opens to the right. When I do it on the iPad, a window opens in the middle of the screen and covers up, the faces of people there, and I couldn't move it. So my question for Steve is there an option to move it, have it open on the right, or is there a way to move it to the right?
Are you using the Zoom app or the Zoom website?
Zoom app.
That would have to be a setting in the app then. I'm trying to open mine now to see.
It is a floating window, so theoretically you should be able to do...
My chat popped open on the left. And okay. The rest of the Zoom is on the right.
Again, since I borrowed it and I'm not familiar with the desktop, I take the mouse and, you know, slide it over. And I do this so automatically, I don't even know if I push a button when I do. I think I probably push the left mouse button. But you can move it easily. I tried putting my finger on it, and it wouldn't move it at all. Maybe I need two fingers or three fingers.
It depends on the app. And you have to... sometimes you have to be tapping in the right place with the app designs. There is an option in the Zoom settings to keep messages on top. And maybe you need to turn that off so that it lets you put the messages to the side and so they don't show up on top of everything else.
Okay. How do you get to the settings?
It's the bottom icon on the left on my Zoom.
The three dots?
No. It's a gear icon.
Oh, the gear.
Oh, okay. I'll look for that and see how that works out. And, one other question. How about pinning? You can pin a person with the desktop. You move to their picture, and three dots appear, and you click on that, and you get a drop-down menu. I don't know how to pin a person... on the iPad.
A little pin icon pops up on mine.
What did you do to get that to pop up?
Tapped on the person I want to pin.
Oh, you tap with the finger on and then it goes up. Okay, good. I'll try those things. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, and Patrick, thanks.
Always enjoying the show.
Yeah. You too. Happy 4th.
I'll also let you switch between gallery view and speaker view. So if you want to see who's speaking or if you want to see everybody.
Right.
So at Cider, we were going back and forth between Zoom and Google Meet. And people started with Zoom, so that's the one they like and the one they know. And on Google Meet, you don't see a big picture of yourself in the gallery. And apparently that's very annoying to people.
Is it?
Yeah.
I prefer...
You get a little thumbnail of yourself. Because most people kind of know what they look like.
You would think. But a lot of people get fascinated by themselves, I guess.
I guess maybe the big picture of yourself reminds you not to pick your nose or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Or not, depending on some of the Zoom meetings we've seen.
We did a Zoom meeting for Rochester Googles. I know we should have done Google Meet, but we did Rochester Googles.
I got a kick out of that, the irony when I got the invitation from Jerry.
But the idea there is that we had we could switch back and forth. And, some people prefer to see a big picture of whoever's talking.
Yep.
But in gallery mode, they're outlined in my machine. It's in yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So... But, however you do it, we've had an awful lot of people suddenly becoming Zoom users over the last few months, and we're seeing more and more and more of that as time goes on.
I'd say it was 10 million in December and 600 million in April.
Yeah. It's and of course, they had growing pains, right?
Yeah.
Just like everybody else did. They actually shut down for, I think, 24 hours. Well, they moved to new servers.
And they've hired a bunch of independent security consultants to help them plug their holes.
Yep. So it's they've had growing pains just like everybody else has. We were all kind of caught short by this stuff. But the reality is that everybody's stepping up and it's all getting done. And we just all have to be just the tiniest little bit patient.
Or at least one of the few states that have flattened our curve.
Right.
Other than because I've got... my wife has two sisters in Arizona, and right now they're going through the roof. You know,
I am so glad my daughter moved back to Rochester in November.
I mean, all the major hospitals there, both in Phoenix and Tucson, are at capacity now. Because, I mean, who would have thought 50,000 folks are being reported a day?
A day.
Mm-hmm. A day, folks.
Yep.
There'll be more people in the U.S. than the entire European Union.
Yep.
What's going to be scary, though, and I hate to see it coming up, though, is, all right, we've got this 4th of July holiday. We're in the midst of it. That folks don't get stupid like they did over the Memorial Day weekend and go to these big parties or, you know, gatherings and everything else. If you go, at least wear a mask. You know, I mean.
That poor guy that just died saying how sorry he was that he exposed all those people. And he believes in masks now?
Yeah, well.
Well,
yeah.
So many of them, you know, there's so many stories that didn't believe in it and then get sick, and a couple of them have died from it.
Yep.
You know, it's not worth it for the little inconvenience. I wear them.
Well, see, that's the problem. No one wants to be slightly inconvenienced to help out their neighbor.
Yeah.
Well, for my job now, I not only have to wear the mask, but when we go to pick up some of these kids, I also have to wear a face shield.
Yeah,
because these kids are medically fragile kids, and, you know, it's their health and mine. Yeah. And, you know, it's for the folks that sit there, you don't have to worry about it. You know what? I'd rather err on the side of safety, just like we tell folks to back up and everything else. That's for safety reasons, so you don't lose files and everything else. The same with being, you know, around.
I keep telling people, I haven't had an accident since I was a teenager. I wear my seatbelt every single day.
Yeah.
I'm not stupid.
Yeah. It saves lives. It's proven so. And you don't argue with that. For right now, for the little bit of inconvenience.
My favorite is the people, I can't breathe in a mask. Horse manure.
Yeah, there's so many misconceptions manure. And myths about masks. Surgeons wear masks 10, 12-hour surgeries.
Yeah.
And in the winter, when it's cold? Do you wear a mask over your face to keep it warm?
Many, many people put a scarf over their mouths and walk around that way. That's okay.
Well,
but having to wear a mask to save lives.
They're overthinking it. You know, they dwell on that.
Yeah. The one I love is that when someone passes gas, you can smell it through all those layers of clothes. So masks don't do any good.
What?
Yeah. So my first thought is, imagine if they weren't wearing clothes.
Yeah, well, there's that.
America's longest-running computer show.
And on that note.
On member-supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, we're going to take a
966 Jazz.
A slight.
That's 966-5299.
Am I waiting for that?
800.
And I don't know what's going on. I'm just going to talk. We're done. We're done for the first hour. But don't go away. We've got another whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming right up. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. And because of you people, I am proud to say it is member-supported Jazz 90.1. Take a quick bio break, and we will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Of course, you can text us at our new text phone number, 585-205-8887. You can text into the chat on YouTube, or I suppose you could just sit in your chair and think real hard. And if we've got the time, We'll talk to you that way, too. But first, we're going to go to the old technology, the phone, and talk to Chuck from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Chuck. What's up?
Hi, guys. I leave the Rochester area for 3 months during the winter.
Yep.
And my house is it has no computer, no internet service. I turn all the electricity off. And what I'd like to be able to do is have a security camera for which I don't need Wi-Fi service, but which I could access through my phone. Does such a thing like that exist?
Yes, they're quite expensive because you would need to get a camera that gave you... pat him down when he's not talking. The wind noise is terrible. You would need to get a camera that did had a phone connection with a SIM chip in it, so you could do wireless phone, cell phone, and that would work, but it would be horribly expensive. Cheaper would be to leave on the internet and have
the electricity for the little
electricity.
Bit of...
I just found a company called TrueLook that offers, they target the construction industry, $300 a month.
Yep.
For a cellular-enabled camera.
I mean, for the amount of electricity, if you turn everything off, like the refrigerator and everything else, the amount of electricity that it's going to use is not going to be that much.
Yeah, I'm not worried so much about the cost. I'm more worried about, I don't know, a fire. I mean, that's as strange maybe as that may sound to you. That's what concerns me, not the cost.
No, I do get that, but if the cost is not a concern, then Steve can post a link to that thing he just found.
On Amazon, you search for cellular security camera, and there's a lot of different cameras that work over the cell system.
But they still need electricity. There's none that will have a 3 month battery.
Nope. Well, here's one that's rechargeable, so you recharge it every couple of weeks.
Yeah, I have to come home every 2 weeks to recharge.
Right,
it.
Yeah. Right. The reality is that with no electricity and no internet, you're just not going to find anything that'll work for 3 months.
Well, the one thing that you would have to do, I mean, here's a consideration: look into a solar panel. A solar panel that might, nowadays, solar panels you can get relatively cheap.
But it has to put out enough voltage to charge the battery.
And if it gets snowed on.
Well, it depends. You know, if he puts it up on the roof and has it there that can charge a battery bank for the little bit of a power that it would use.
Right.
I mean, you're talking one little camera, so you might want to look into that possibility, too.
Okay. Would there be a specific company, or are there... a lot of different companies.
There's a lot of them right now. Yeah. Solar panels have exploded.
And some of the cameras come with solar. Not come with, but you can buy solar panels for them too.
Yeah, they're
finding hundreds of them on Amazon.
Yeah, more and more folks are using them. They're taking them out camping and everything else that they can quick set it up and bam, hook it up to batteries, and all of a sudden they can watch TV and everything else.
So the key terminology is cellular battery operator,
portable, or solar.
Solar, yeah.
Yeah, some of them have the solar charger. I found one for $250. Now, what I don't see is you have to get a cell plan for it because it's a cellular system, so you have to pay for cell service.
Okay.
Well, and that's probably unlimited data.
I would hope.
You mean it wouldn't work on my conventional? I'm with T-Mobile, for example. It wouldn't just work on T-Mobile.
You would have to add that as a new phone on your T-Mobile plan.
I see. Okay, so it becomes more expensive again.
Right.
Yeah. How about, do you know your neighbors very well? Buy a camera, put it on their house, point it at yours.
I've been doing this for 20 years now, and I've been going without any sort of security device at all. But lately, I'm more concerned. So,
the one I found specifically works with T-Mobile. I can post it. It's called that's the RioLink, RioLink.
Okay.
It's $250 with a solar charger.
Okay. And that's called RioLink.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll look into that.
And also, talk to some of the security companies and see what packages they have for the snowbirds.
Okay, that's a thought too. Yeah, I just wanted to avoid having to use my electricity and you know, the internet service, which I actually don't have.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
So I'm finding solar powered ones and I'm finding cellular ones. Getting a cellular solar powered one adds to the price.
Right.
But they are out there.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. It's I understand what he's asking for, but unfortunately, yeah. Battery technology and internet technology are costly. And are really not at the level he'd like them to be right now. You've got to have some sort of power, and I don't know of a battery that would last for 3 months.
Yeah, I keep looking for a inexpensive. That's my first problem.
Yeah, oh, number one.
A weather station with free internet connection to put in our flying field. So I can see how bad the wind is
right.
before I drive all the way out there. But yeah, so get a camera, either a camera pointed at the windsock
yeah.
or have an actual anemometer on the right. roof. But then it needs to have a internet connection. So it needs to have a cellular. But if this, you know, this phone is, or this camera is only $250 and get, you know, a $10 a month prepaid cell plan, see how much data it actually needs for a camera.
Right.
That might be doable.
Might be.
Hmm?
If you got something that actually only sent wind data from an anemometer,
yeah,
you could easily do it with a cheap plan.
Yeah.
You know, get those senior pop or whatever that's called.
Mm-hmm. Mint now? I like the new the commercials for Mint now that Ryan Reynolds bought
them.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, so here's our next news item. The threat of ransomware may seem ubiquitous, but there haven't been too many strains tailored specifically to infect Macs since the first full-fledged Mac ransomware surfaced only 4 years ago. So when Dinesh Devados, a malware researcher at the firm K7 Lab, published findings on Tuesday about a new example of Mac ransomware, that fact alone was significant. It turns out, though, that the malware, which researchers are now calling ThiefQuest, gets even more interesting from there. In addition to ransomware, ThiefQuest has a whole other set of spyware capabilities that allows it to steal files from an infected computer, search the system for passwords and cryptocurrency wallet data, and run a robust keylogger to grab passwords, credit card numbers, and other financial information as the user types it in. The spyware component also lurks persistently as a backdoor on infected devices, meaning it sticks around even after the computer reboots and could be used as a launch pad for additional or second stage attacks. Given that ransomware is so rare on Macs to begin with, this 1-2 punch is essentially noteworthy. Though ThiefQuest was packed with menacing features, it is unlikely to infect your Mac anytime soon unless you download pirated, unvetted software or get it from someone else. Thomas Reed, the director of Mac and mobile platforms at security firm Malwarebytes, found that ThiefQuest is being distributed on torrent sites bundled with name brand software like the security application Little Snitch, DJ software mixed in key, and music production platform Ableton. K7's Devados notes that the malware itself is designed to look like a Google software update program. So far, though, the researchers say it doesn't seem to have a significant number of downloads and no one has paid a ransom to the Bitcoin address the attackers provide. For your Mac to become infected, you would need to torrent a compromised installer and then dismiss a series of warnings from Apple in order to run it, which too many people do.
Mm-hmm.
Or, of course, you'd have to get it from someone who already did that. It's a good reminder to get your software from trustworthy sources, like developers whose code is signed by Apple to prove its legitimacy, or from Apple's App Store itself. But if you're someone who already torrents programs or gets software from friends who torrent, and is used to ignoring Apple's flags, ThiefQuest illustrates the risks of that approach. Given that the malware is being distributed through torrents, seems to focus on stealing, and still has some kinks, the researchers say it was likely created by criminal hackers rather than a nation-state spy looking to conduct espionage. It's not entirely uncommon in the realm of Windows malware to don a ransomware guise as a distraction or false flag. The not-patch malware, which caused most impactful and costly cyber attack in history pretended to be ransomware after all. Perhaps the malware is using ransomware's hallmark file encryption as a destructive tool in an attempt to permanently lock users out of their computers, or maybe ThiefQuest is just looking to make as much money out of their victims as possible. The real question with Mac ransomware, as always, is what will come next. So where do you get your software? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
What's interesting is that we're seeing a lot of a lot more people, Mac and Windows side, never add any additional software. Because you've got a web browser, you've got an email client, you've got your photo, basic photo editor built in. So you, it all comes with the computer and you almost never need anything else.
Right. So what we find are people who want to play around with professional quality products.
Right.
And they don't want to pay $600 for this and $700 for
Photoshop.
I've heard about Photoshop for editing my files, so I'll steal Photoshop. Instead of using one of the multiple alternatives
that do just as
including
good.
Free or even Photoshop Elements for $100 does almost everything the home user would need.
Right, certainly more than the home
for
user.
For the Joe average user, would be more than
which is free does everything.
Yeah. Again, there's stuff there, but people don't take the time to go out and do the research. People they want everything, you know, just handed to them and not have to do any of the work.
Right. Well, how many people do we get who are frustrated with Windows and don't want to look at anything else?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't work well, but it's the only thing out there. Well, no, it isn't.
Mm-hmm. They don't want to know anything else, right? You know, or learn. Take the time to learn.
Right. And to go back to Steve's point, that's why Chromebooks are so popular.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't do more than a Chromebook need. They don't need more than a Chromebook does. So you get your browser. You get your email, you get your photos, you get your calendar, you get Android apps, you get Linux apps. You can do anything you want on a Chromebook. And
the other thing is you don't get viruses, spyware, and you don't have to worry about the stupid updates that Windows does. It turns around and bricks most machines.
That's right.
Or erases files. Because, we're sorry, we didn't mean to do that, but, you know, go to your backups. And then a lot of folks go, I meant to.
Right. Right.
The biggest thing you always hear, I meant to back up.
Go to asknick.com/backup.php, read it, and find something that you can use. Backing up, setting it up is just a little tiny, tiny, tiny bit of a pain. But once you've done that, it saves you so much pain down the road. So much pain. I gave my wife pCloud. I gave my daughter pCloud, and all their stuff is now backed up to the cloud, and they never have to worry if they lose their machine or it's broken or whatever.
Well, my wife and I both have our stuff up to Google.
Yep.
And then I've got two other portable drives that hang off my network because I just added this new Buffalo drive that's an independent hard drive. It's not shared on my network. You know, for anybody to get at, and we both, I have it automatically set up. Again, it took me a little time. Big deal. You know, once you get it set up, you can just periodically now, I got a reminder. Every week, I just go in and just quick, takes me all of 2 minutes maybe to go in and make sure, it did the backup. Oh, yep, it did it there. Because I learned another hard lesson is one of my log files. For some reason, it got scrambled. And you know, I had a lot of information in there that was lost. And for me, it was, you know, information whether I sent stuff out or not. But luckily, the software had automatically been backing it up. Okay. That's good. At least I'm covered there. But I turned around and now added that to my backup routine. So it's now backed up in two other places. And along with over on Google, my Google storage up in the cloud.
I have to get a new NAS drive. My my current NAS drive is not really well.
Like I say, I was worried about my server. My server I hate to say how old it is. I won't.
It's older than some of your socks.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely older. This is back when NYPC was Dover on Brighton Henry at a Town Line Road.
Right.
And we set it up. So, yeah, you know, it's
you,
going.
Folks, you measure that in decades.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I know what's going on borrowed time. That's why I went ahead and got the other NAS drives and set them up. And they're right next to each other. That way, if, you know, it does one you know, certain days, the other one to the other days. And it's, I got it set up so it does it at night.
Right. It never gets in anybody's way.
No.
Absolutely.
It doesn't get in any, even if it does, for the little bit that it, you know, checks, because my wife doesn't do a heck of a lot. I probably do more than her until she starts taking her photos. But those I got automatically going up to Google Photos for. She thinks that's the nuts because she, a couple times she accidentally deleted a few files. She went because she had done this whole row of graves, and it got deleted, but it was already up. I said, "Oh, wait a minute!" And I showed her how to go up onto Google Docs or the Google Photos and pull them all down. Oh, that's handy.
Yeah,
it's there.
That's why it's there, honey.
Yeah,
you were the hero.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it saves because it takes her some time. What my explain to the folks out there? What my wife does is she goes to. Not to sound morbid, but she is what they call a grave finder. And what she does is she goes out and takes photos and posts those photos of the grave headstones for folks that are trying to do genealogy and tick and tie all their loved ones that have passed away. So a lot of these folks are out of state. We get requests. Because she is listed as one of the professional photographers to go to one of the cemeteries, find the person, and take a photo so that then she publishes it up there, and then people can add it to their family trees. And it's amazing the hundreds right now of folks that are post in a given week wanting this information because everybody now is, you know, even though we seem to be distancing ourselves from our families, you know, we don't have time to do this or do that, that we're finding, you know, they still want to know their past. And, you know, you see the genealogy things. Well, we thought we were German. And
yeah, turned
turned his kilt in for, or his lederhoses for a kilt.
Right.
Because folks are finding out more and more about their ancestry. But, you know, again, going back, it's important to do those backups, though, and have that information so you don't become like Tom did there in Brighton, you know, trying to scramble now to save his wife's files. You know, you don't want to be in that position, folks, and say that you didn't have the time. You got to make the time. It's how important is that information to you?
And how hard was it to set up that network-attached drive?
It just popped up. I plugged it in.
Plug it in, it pops up. How hard is that?
Yeah.
Oh, no. You had to plug in the power. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then put the other cord into my switch.
Right. You had to put
it in. So I did two things.
Doggone it. No wonder it's so hard.
No, I'll take that back. Three. I had to take it out of the box and set it up.
Oh, unbelievable.
And turn it on. Plug it in, and then plug the network connection in.
Oh, man, I hope you took a nap after that.
I went upstairs, and I just had to take a rest.
Just had to lie down.
And then go in, and I divided it up. I created a folder for my wife's stuff, folder for mine, and then a generic one that I can share if I want to share any of the stuff. But, you know, I haven't used that one because we just keep our stuff there. But, yeah, I mean, so now I got it in three places. So I'm good. And I don't have to worry about, you know, well, I know I said it a while ago, you know, when my Windows 7 machine died, it was like, oh, no, no big deal.
No big deal.
It was already backed up to Google.
Right.
I literally just set it aside because it was toast. It had it. And I just installed a few other programs that I needed on it. And I was back up and running within a couple of hours.
Right. Right, and that's all it takes. And you can even get wireless NAS now. Oh, so yeah. You don't even have to plug in a cable for it.
Well, I still prefer wires. I don't know why.
I don't disagree because they're faster is part of it.
More efficient, and less overhead. Yeah.
And more secure.
Yep.
Because somebody would have to come in and actually clip in to my network to get something.
You mean you don't have an Ethernet jack on the outside of your house?
You know, shockingly, I do not.
No, but I got wireless out there.
Although I've thought of it, and so do I.
I've seen security people that have done research with, you know, just putting a USB port in the wall and watching what people stick into it and suck data, or dropping flash drives in the parking lot and see how far your research malware will go.
Right.
Well, a lot of it, you can buy outlets now that have the USB for charging.
Yeah.
Right.
And too many folks think it's for internet, too.
Well, no, I've seen pictures where someone has their AC wall wart plugged in with the USB charger in the wall wart next to the USB port
that
they could have just plugged into.
Right. But at any rate, if you're not backing up in at least two places, well, go to asknick.com/backup.php. Read that.
I pinned it to the top of the soundbites list.
Oh, good, thanks.
Because we can't stress it enough. I mean, I know Steve and I have had to put up with so many times telling folks, we're sorry, you know, there's nothing we can do.
Such a heartbreak.
Yeah, I mean, and you see the faces. I mean, you know, their whole world is crushed because all of a sudden they lost all this information and they're so upset because I remember one girl, she had been working on a term paper.
Oh, yeah.
She was so proud of it.
I used to get that all the time.
And she had so many references and all this other stuff tied to it and everything. She lost it all.
Mm-hmm.
Lost it all. And she was saying, you know, could you tell, write a note to my teacher that, you know, it was on there? And I says, no. I can tell her that it died, but I have no proof that it was on there because you didn't have any backups. If you had done an old backup, we could have maybe gotten something. But the drive was totally dead and there was nothing I could do with it. Except, you know, say, sorry, you know, it's just the way it is.
And you didn't back up a copy on your hard drive? You didn't, you know, $5 to buy another USB drive? You couldn't buy one of those?
Or people bring out the sealed package. Yeah, I got one of those, like you told me 6 months ago.
Yeah, right. All right, we're going to take a slight break back. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get right to you when we come back. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Dennis?
Well, a few weeks ago, I called you about my Windows 10 randomly rebooting, and we talked about the fact that the box might be too old. But let me give you a little quick background, and then I'll ask my question. I've noticed that the times when it randomly reboots, there's no error message, there's no blue screen. It just reboots as if I was doing the startup button and then it restarts normally. It has happened when I was downloading, updating definitions for super anti-spyware. It's rebooted when Windows Defender viruses were downloading. And so my question is, I am running both Avast and Windows Defender. Should I keep Windows Defender on or not?
I wouldn't.
What, it's Windows Defender and what?
Avast antivirus.
Oh, you don't need two. They will interfere with each other.
One of the things I've been hearing a lot frequently is that the Windows Defender... Oh, yeah, I'm going to screw that down a bit. Windows Defender, because it's from Microsoft, already buried into the OS, already has kernel access, you're probably better off with just that not adding anything else on top that then has to hook itself into to the OS.
I would say Avast is great for antivirus. You want to also do super anti-spyware and malware bytes. Because right now, the big push, I mean, there's still viruses out there that are going to get you. But the big thing right now that they're going after is the spyware and malware. Because that's where, even though we call them dumb, you know, people that are, you know, trying to steal your information, it's pretty smart. Because they do these scripts that like to steal your personal information, whether it be as simple as stealing your, say, emails. Because then they can turn around and sell that to other spammers. Now they're making money. Whereas before, viruses didn't make them any money. Spyware and malware, they can make money off of that, literally robbing you or selling your information.
Now, one thing I will say about Windows Defender, which is actually now called Microsoft Defender Antivirus, it does defend against viruses, malware, and spyware across your email and apps and the cloud and the web. Microsoft has actually done a pretty decent job. Nobody does a great job, but Defender has done a decent job. So if you've got to pick one, one or the other is fine, but Windows Defender actually protects against more than Avast does.
And the only thing, though, I would be leery on is great, they do it, but how often do they update?
Well, that's the important thing.
Yeah.
Well,
I noticed they update at least twice a day.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. I would just pick one.
Okay, and then there's this other thing called ransomware protection, controlled folder access. It's blocking a lot of normal Windows processes, and then because I looked at the history, and I have to go back and decide, do I want to allow a Windows process to access something or other, folders or something?
Right.
Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, what ransomware does is lock up your machine so that you can't get at anything. Ransomware protection is supposed to prevent that, but the way it does it is preventing you from getting at certain things, not just ransomware, but you too. So,
and more common is fake ransomware that claims to have encrypted all your files and want a ransom.
Better than ransomware is backing up. If you can back up to something that's not normally easily accessed from your machine, that is to say, an offsite backup that you can that turns itself off when you're done, et cetera, et cetera. That is the best protection against ransomware because the ransomware might lock up your machine but can't get at that other backup.
Okay, I missed part of what you said because I got a little blip in my phone here. Say that sentence, last couple of sentences again.
Yeah, I don't remember what I said, but I think what I said was something about the best protection against ransomware is backups.
Yep.
Offsite backups that are not normally attached to your machine.
And they shut off when they're done.
So if you have, for example, an SSH connection to a machine that you turn on, send out your data, turn it off again, that's the best protection against ransomware because if the ransomware locks up your machine, it can't get to that offsite storage.
Sure. So let me just make one more comment about this ransomware thing. It seems like I have to go and look at the protection history and then decide whether I want to allow each app or whatever to...
gain access.
To gain access, yeah.
To gain access. Like, yeah. I do indexing and I'm looking at this one. It says search finder... .exe it was blocked.
Right.
And so I have to decide whether I want to turn the ransomware protection off or keep it on or just go back and manually check what's being blocked and decide to give it access or not.
That's what you're saying.
That's your choices.
That's your choice. Yep.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give all of that some thought, and thanks for your advice.
All right. Thank you, Dennis. Good luck.
Okay. Thanks.
A lot of the problems with that, with some of the ransomware protection, is it asks if you want this program to access your files, and you frequently have no idea what that program name is, because common on Windows is the .exe file isn't anything close to the program name.
and what I'd like to be able to say is, well, you know what? It can access these mm-hmm. folders,
yep.
but nothing else.
Yeah.
And they don't usually give you that option. There's no granularity there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I have a question about sort of storage and backup.
Sure.
Our main family machine's a Lenovo laptop with a terabyte of storage that's right now bumping up against that limit. It's about 300 or so gigabytes of pictures, 300 gigabytes of music, and about 300 of other.
Right.
And I think what the other is we, our family, there's four of us, and that means there's eight Apple devices. We each have an iPhone and an iPad, and we're backing those up, or at least most of us are, to that laptop.
Right.
And at this point, we're like, I'm out of storage space, and I'm getting ready to purchase a new laptop that I'll use for work and for school. So it feels like we've got to move some of this stuff to the cloud. And I'm just wondering what the best way to do that is. I can get 2 terabytes of iCloud storage space for what, $10 a month. And it feels like that might be a path, but I'm just not sure what makes sense and how to organize this and sort of get all this under control. Oh, and by the way, we're backing up the Lenovo to Carbonite. So
that's good.
Would I save some money if I went to the cloud and depended on that for my backup, or do I need both?
Well, Carbonite's pretty good. We still recommend at least 2 backups.
Yeah, both is better, but then you're paying for both.
So let's take this piecemeal if we can. One thing everybody can do, even if you're on an iOS device, is you can use Google for your photos. And Google will save an unlimited number of photos for free if you put it in the, what do they call it, high quality as opposed to original quality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you use the high quality mode, which is still honestly better than most phone cameras. If you use that, then your storage is free. I've got tens of thousands of pictures stored in iCloud, in Google Photos, and it's all free.
Okay.
And it's also automated. So if someone takes a picture on their iPhone, it automatically backs up to their individual Google Photos account.
Okay.
So that would be a secondary storage, an automatic secondary storage for your photos. Documents, I don't know how many documents you have on your phones, but you
very few.
Man. Right, but you do get 5 gigabytes of free storage. If you're going to get a Gmail account for photos, you also get a Docs account, and you get 5 gigabytes free there. That would certainly be a place to store the minimum number of documents that an iPhone generates.
Okay.
Right. So as for music, that's a separate story entirely. My suggestion would be, yes, you want to keep those backed up probably. Well, if they're in iTunes...
They're stored on your local disk and then backed up with your local backup. And if you tell Carbonite to back up your home folder, they're backed up there too.
Right.
And music you purchase from the iTunes store, you can always not all. You almost always re-download again, unless the publisher has removed them from the store. One of the issues we run into frequently, especially with photos, is the difference between sync and backup. The iCloud photo library will sync to the cloud, and then on all your devices, there's another setting called Optimize for this device. And what that does is it removes the high-res versions from your device, your phone or your computer, in favor of the cloud so that it can free up space on your local device. Which is okay, but the issue comes in when you're editing your photos. When you make an edit, in essence, it removes the intermediate steps. So if you make, you know, two or three edits and you want to go back to the one that was two versions ago, you can't because it was a sync. But if you've done a backup, which makes a copy and then doesn't touch it, you can. And as we were talking about earlier with a previous caller, occasionally things get confused and it syncs empty. And instead of syncing the stuff that's there, it takes your empty drive and syncs it up to the cloud as being empty, so, which is why it's good to have two separate backups as well.
Okay.
And with the iDevice backup, backing up to iCloud is automatic, which is very convenient, but it does need that cloud space. And for a lot of people, the 200 gig plan for $3 a month is enough. But then you can go to the 2 terabytes. They used to have a 1 terabyte plan for $10 a month, but they made that 2 terabytes for $10 a month. It'd be nice if there was a 1 terabyte in the middle there $6 a month.
Is that a family plan?
200 is the family plan, starting at 200. So that 200 gig with the can be shared among all your devices in your family plan as well. And you can back up manually to your computer, which is what you're probably seeing those iOS backup files are. Some people like doing that. Some people like using the cloud. It isn't bad to use both, but if you're running out of storage space on your local computer, then you can probably go into iTunes and delete those old backups of your phone. Especially, say you've got a 128 gig phone that's nearly full. It put 128 gigs on your computer to back up that phone.
Every time.
Yeah.
Right, and I suspect what's going on in there is there are phones that have long since, you know, hit the trash can that were backed up.
We frequently see that people bring their computers into us and their disk is full. First thing we look at is their iDevice backups. And, all right, you got four phones going back 8 years. You probably don't need those backups anymore. Now your drive is half empty.
Right. All right, okay. Mark, we kind of got to move on.
All righty. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
The other thing to remember about backups is they do often accumulate.
Yeah.
Depending on how you're backing up. So you want to do, want to be aware of that and deal with it.
And most of the backup services will have an aging plan. So it'll age out and delete the oldest ones.
Right.
The Time Machine automatic backup that comes with the Mac does that when your backup drive is full. It will start deleting the oldest backups. We often like to recommend people then get a new drive to continue their backups forward so they can keep those old backups just in case.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Canandaigua, New York. Hi, Paul. What's up?
Cloud storage again.
Yeah.
Are things encrypted when they go up? Is that a standard product service?
Usually encrypted during transport.
Right. But
encrypted at rest is the bigger issue.
So there's three things at play here. One is you can encrypt them at your machine before you send them up. And in that case, depending on how good your local encryption is, you're fine.
Right.
You can encrypt them once they get there, but that means that they got sent in plain text, which could be a problem.
Okay.
Or you can, the third option is to encrypt them during transit, but not at either end. And the fourth choice is to encrypt them at your end and encrypt them as they go, and then they're encrypted when they get there.
So whose responsibility is these four?
Well, initially yours.
No, when I do my own, I know I've done it, but in the transit, there's some place I can pick an option to encrypt in transit?
Yes. It depends entirely on what you buy.
Oh, okay. Oh, so these get added on to the basic price.
Right. So, for example, as I said before, one of the things we've got here is a pCloud.
Right.
Right. And so you can add encryption, which encrypts on the client side, which means that it gets encrypted on your machine before it gets sent up, so it's clean.
Okay. All righty. Okay.
And the folks at pCloud never know what your encryption keys are or anything like that.
And that's an additional monthly charge, or is that part of that lifetime thing?
It's an addition, but I'm looking to see. No, right. Holy moly.
Encrypted during transport is almost always turned on for all the services.
Right.
Okay.
So when it goes from you to them, it's encrypted over the public internet.
Well, what it looks like right now is that it is a one-time payment of $125 for life.
For the encryption part of it.
Oh. It looks that way.
Okay, okay. All right. And then the other question is, backup is usually the whole user folder on Windows?
That's probably best.
Yeah.
They don't hide things out of that, or...
Well, it depends on programs. Now, if you're using a banking program, say Quicken or something else, that could store it in its own other folder.
But oftentimes, it's in that invisible local data folder, which is in your home folder.
Right. Hopefully.
Yeah.
But the basic idea is there's two things you can back up. One is the entire hard drive, and the other is just your data. What you want to back up is your data. Wherever you store that, you should be backing that up.
Okay, okay. Finally, on the Google Photos thing, when you use that service, they change it to their own format that's more compressed or something?
You have two choices. One is what they call high resolution, which is a maximum of 16 gigs. So if your photo is...
Megapixels.
Megapixels. So if your photo is bigger than 16 megapixels... it will be converted.
Okay.
And the other is original storage, which
great.
Doesn't change it. But it is the high-quality storage that is free.
Okay.
But I think it leaves them as JPEGs.
Yeah.
It might just be a different compression
right.
level.
Yeah. So what the basic point here is very few camera phones are better than 16 megapixels.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering whether if I brought one down... would it go back to the JPEG I sent up, or
it stays JPEG?
Would it be their proprietary format that?
It's not proprietary, but it is a maximum of 16 megapixels.
Okay, so it's still a file that everybody knows.
Right. So you can send them to people. You can also link to them in Google Photos. So, for example, my sister-in-law in Arizona, I send her links to folders worth of stuff, and she can see all of that there.
Okay, well, I thought it might just be some weird thing that I would have to open.
No.
Okay, very good.
All right, we got to go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We want to thank everybody who called in. I have to apologize to those of you who called in so late. We only are here 2 hours. So please call earlier next time. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And we remain truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we have continued to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to each other. Happy, happy 4th of July to everyone. We will see you in just 166 hours.